Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
So I sat down with Coach Moglia yesterday in his office. This, of course, is Charleston Southern Week. Everybody is very excited about that. I think at times with this Coastal Carolina football program, people can just get too used to winning. I mean, they just win so much. I mean, they're not only are they 7-0 this season, but you know, they just really have not lost FCS games the past 2 years to people outside of the national champion on the road. I mean, in that 2 year, we're going on a third season here where their only two Big South losses were home against Liberty and at Charleston Southern in 2013. So Coastal Carolina finds itself going back there to a place where they lost the last time they were, facing a triple option team that is very different than what they have seen on the defensive side of the ball this year. So there are a lot of questions going around about whether Coastal can win this game, and we'll get into more of that tomorrow and certainly on the Tailgate Show, which we're going to host from the Warehouse Bar on Laurel Street in downtown Conway from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. That's when this interview that I did with Coach Moglia is going to air in its entirety. But I want to start off with one of his answers to a question of mine early in the interview because I think it's really interesting. Now, I did, in passing, speak with Matt Hogue, the athletic director, a couple of weeks ago, and we were joking about what I could potentially interview him on this show because we hadn't had him on since we were asking him about alcohol at stadiums at Coastal Carolina. And apparently that has no momentum. I haven't heard anything about that, and he just kind of shrugged and said I wouldn't count on it anytime soon. But I was joking around with him, and I said, you know, Matt, what else could I talk to you about? And I said, you got a lot of old coaches in important positions. You know, who's on your short list? And I was teasing, of course, because the last thing the athletic director is going to do is pull out a list from his pocket and say, okay, this guy's fifth, this guy's fourth, this guy's third, this is who I'm calling. You know, he's just not going to do that. So that was kind of my joke to him. And he just looked at me, and he didn't really smile. He just said, hey, those coaches would object to them being called old and saying they're on the home stretch. So Cliff Ellis, Gary Gilmore, and Joe Moglia, certainly not at the beginning of their careers. We have no idea how much longer they will coach for at Coastal Carolina. But when I sat down with Coach Moglia yesterday, I asked him, because he's got pictures on his wall. One of them is the guy who plays Doug Stamper in House of Cards. And it's prompted the question, who is the person that you've been most awed to meet in person, thinking that there would be some crazy celebrity? And I guess the fact that he answered with Warren Buffett does mean, yes, some crazy celebrity. But he answered that the person he was most awed to meet was Warren Buffett. And I asked him, what about his approach to maybe life or business or running the Chanticleer program has been borrowed from Warren Buffett? And this is his answer.
Well, I think we're in sync philosophically in terms of a lot of things. So, for example, I'm a huge believer that you make decisions on people. He certainly does that all the time. I'm a huge believer that to be happy, you've got to be doing something you love in life and have skill sets for. He's still tap dancing to work every day, and he's in his 80s. That's the way I feel about what I do as a football coach. That's the way I felt when I was in the business world. So we both have those types of thought processes that are really very, very, very important, fundamental basis upon which you live your life that we're in sync on.
Still tap dancing to work in his 80s. That's Warren Buffett. That's the guy that Coach Mowgli is open about respecting and idolizing more than anybody in the business world, and someone who he wants to be compared to, or someone that he wants to emulate on some level. I think that's very interesting that he picks Warren Buffett and says, hey, this is a guy that's tap dancing to work into his 80s, like I'm tap dancing to work right now. And so it might be tempting to look at Coach Moglia's age and say, okay, he's 66. How much longer can he coach for? But he says, you know what? I'm tap dancing to work. So I thought that's very interesting. I mean, no one certainly is trying to run Coach Moglia out, but you do wonder, well, okay, they're going FBS, they're going into the Sun Belt. How many years does he have left? Because this is an incredible run the Chanticleers are on. And he's saying, hey, I'm tap dancing to work right now. So he could be coaching Coastal Carolina for a long, long time. And it's one of the most awkward conversations really to have in the sporting world is when an athlete or a coach is done, like when they're finished. And when they realize that is typically after everybody else realizes it, right? Like Kobe Bryant opens up his season last night, shoots 8 for 24 from the field. It's his 20th NBA season. He seems to not be realizing that maybe, hey, it's better for the Lakers if he doesn't shoot 24 times a night. He still thinks that he's the best player in the NBA. We see with Peyton Manning right now, 7 touchdowns and 10 interceptions this season, and a great defense is the reason why they're undefeated. I mean, his throws don't have velocity anymore. And a lot of people wish, like, hey, man, I wish we didn't have to see this version of Peyton Manning be the last vision that we had of Peyton Manning. We saw it with the ball coach. A lot of people would prefer that his last season not be 0-4 in the SEC, followed by a midseason resignation. And so it is kind of an odd concept to think about, because in sports, it's a results-driven business, and you're not afforded to be a Supreme Court justice that gets an appointment and just stays forever. You're not the Pope. It's not a lifetime term. Appalachian State went through this with Jerry Moore a couple of years ago. They moved on from him because they said, you know, hey, we're not going into FBS football with a 75-year-old coach. We draw the line there. And from what I understand, I mean, Coach Mowgli's got the longest leash of all time right now. He might have the coldest seat in all of college football. So I think he gets to decide when it's over. But it is interesting that he did use, to me, the term tap dance to work, which makes me think that he has plenty of motivation to continue doing this for a long time. And that's a good thing, because you can't argue with what he's been able to do. I mean, how many people would love to have his one-loss record right now? The fact that, you know, he has won north of 75% of his games, I think, at Coastal Carolina. I don't know the exact percentage, because that number in the left-hand term column goes up each and every week, and I haven't adjusted it each and every week. But they are 7-0 this season. They're playing Charleston Southern. Very big game this Saturday, 7 p.m. kickoff. Not only do we have the tailgate show, of course, we do have the game broadcast right here on 100.3 The Team. Now, speaking of undefeated teams and local ties, sorry to pump fake you Clemson fans. We'll get into you later in the show. But the Carolina Panthers have a game with Andrew Luck this weekend and the Indianapolis Colts. And everybody in Charlotte really badly wanted Andrew Luck. Like, really, really badly wanted Andrew Luck. They know they're going to have the first pick in the draft because they're 2-14. Andrew Luck is draft eligible. He's a junior. And I distinctly remember, like, I was in college at the time, but I was at home on Christmas break listening to WFNZ 610 The Fan, which I later worked for, in Charlotte the day Luck announced he was going back to Stanford. And it was like the most depressing day in the history of Charlotte sports talk. Like, people thought that they were going to be given this greatest gift of all time. And the consolation prize ends up being Cam Newton, who's playing better football than Andrew Luck at this moment. And they're playing this weekend. And there are a lot of Charlotteans that think that Andrew Luck dissed their city and dissed their franchise and have a big-time chip on their shoulder about Andrew Luck. And I never viewed it that way, because Luck is just a different cat. I mean, when you hear him talk, you can say, like, this is, and listen, it takes one to know one, but this is a big nerd. I mean, this is a goofy guy, and this is the kind of dude that actually would like to stay at Stanford for another year and get his architecture degree. And his dad, Oliver Luck, not only was he an NFL quarterback who was Archie Manning's teammate at times in the NFL, which created a special irony when Andrew Luck replaces Peyton Manning, given that Oliver Luck was Archie Manning's backup. This is a guy that whose family values education. If his dad's the athletic director at West Virginia and probably preaches to his own kids to stay in school, it's not surprising that his very child ends up going back to Stanford for a fourth year. So it is interesting because of, in sports, how that one play can have a ripple effect, how that one decision can have such a massive ripple effect. If Andrew Luck didn't enjoy playing at Stanford as much as he did or going to school at Stanford, he could be the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers this weekend going up against the Colts. And would the Colts have abandoned Peyton Manning if they didn't know that they had Andrew Luck coming in the pipe? I mean, imagine that. Imagine if Andrew Luck wasn't available to the Colts. Do they still stick with Peyton Manning, or do they draft RG3? Would they have dumped Peyton Manning for RG3? And imagine that response if those careers had gone the way that they've gone now. But so much of sports, so much of life, so much of any job is situation, right? I mean, I'm not a huge fan of RG3 and his skill set as it relates to the NFL or his personality, but there's no doubt that he got drafted by about the worst franchise in sports to get drafted to with the Dan Snyder ownership. And I don't know what a shot, if he would have had a better shot to succeed if he had landed elsewhere, but so much of it is fit. And I say this all the time with Cam, and some people are starting to say that he's a dark horse for MVP, and I don't think he's going to get MVP consideration because he's not going to have the Rodgers or Brady stats. Like, at the end of the season, you're going to be looking at Rodgers and Brady having like 35 to 40 touchdown seasons with almost no interceptions, completing 65 to 70%. And then you're going to look at Cam, and it's going to look far uglier than that in terms of pure passer rating. And that's a hard thing for people to get around. But he's not in a position where the skill talent around him can put up those gaudy numbers. But as they head into this weekend, they are undefeated. They are the most important number, you know, 100%, 1,000% the win percentage. It's more important than his touchdown interception ratio. Although I hate people that count rings in sports, so I won't be overly simplistic and say Cam's the only reason that they're undefeated. But they do go into the game with the Colts this weekend, and I think people are starting to understand that they're for real this year. We talked about that on Monday, that they're a legit contender. And it would be, I think, if you are David Gettleman, the general manager of the Carolina Panthers, I think it would be very tempting to say, in fact, they are one player away. When you look at what they can do, everyone agrees that their defense is amazing, that it's one of the best in the NFL, if not the best right now. Everyone agrees that their power running game is really strong and not something that teams are used to facing on a week-to-week basis and will be excellent in the cold by the time the end of the season pulls around and you're supposed to be playing your best football. But who's going to come up with a big grab if it's not Greg Olsen, right? They pretty much have one target that you can count on in the passing game. And it would be, I think, very tempting to say you're one player away and you need to go out and get that player. And they kind of went through that process picking up Jared Allen a couple of weeks ago. They picked up a pass rusher in his 30s from a team that was floundering on a team that was, at that time, still undefeated, the Carolina Panthers were, and their pass rush didn't look great. Well, they pull in Jared Allen, and Kawan Short looks like the best defensive tackle in the game over the last 2 weeks, and suddenly their pass rush is fine. All they need is someone in the passing game to make them a little more dynamic or to come up with a big catch here and there. And it's easy to get Jared Allen when he's only under contract for a year more and the Bears are paying the majority of that contract and they only give up a seventh-round pick. Ideally, you would have as many draft picks as possible, so odds are one of them in the late rounds becomes a Josh Norman, right? If you have a ton of draft picks, there are Richard Shermans and Josh Normans out there that provide excellent value late in the draft. So even though it's a late draft pick, you do hate to give it up, but okay. If it makes their pass rush on a contending team better, you can sell me on that. But it has to be one of the hardest things facing a general manager is how much do I go all in for this year, particularly knowing in the NFL playoffs that one bounce of the ball in a one-and-done setting, just like with March Madness, that one game can affect the course of your season. I mean, you can mortgage your future for this one playoff run, and then you lose at Lambeau Field in the NFC Championship game because Aaron Rodgers is the man. And what are you left with, right? And Dave Gettleman seems like the most cautious dude of all time. I mean, I'm surprised he doesn't wear pocket protectors in his short sleeve Oxford shirt. I mean, he is risk averse, as you can say. And there is a big time name in the passing game at the wideout position that some people are starting to float out there for trades. And that's kind of why I don't see it. I don't see Dave Gettleman doing this. And Bart Scott was on CBS Sports Radio, the former defensive player for the Jets. Very entertaining. The can't wait guy, if you remember that. He was on the DA show, and he's impressed with the Panthers, but he just doesn't feel like they get enough out of their passing game.
I mean, it said a lot that they were able to march 80 yards and they were able to hold them in check. But really, who's a threat there in Seattle right now? They can't protect the quarterback. I have to see them beat somebody else. I would love to see them make a trade.
What do you want them to trade for?
Calvin Johnson.
Boom. Megatron. Man, what an intoxicating thought that is. That suddenly the Panthers offense, which isn't explosive at all, unless Ted Ginn decides to have hands and Cam can hit him 50 yards down the field, you suddenly have Megatron. But this isn't a Jared Allen situation because you're not getting him on the cheap and you have future money committed. And we don't even know that the Lions would be willing to cough him up. But here's this. He is 30 years old, Calvin Johnson is, and he's in the middle of a 7-year deal that finishes in 2020. So you would be on the hook for 5 more seasons of $16.2 million to a wide receiver. Who wants to be paying $16.2 million to a wide receiver that's going to be 31, 32, 33, 34, 35? And he is big. He is really big. So that means that it's not like he's a small guy that's a burner and you have no idea how he's going to hold up. I mean, he always is going to have that terrific size at his old age, but he started to slow down a little bit. He started to have some injury issues. And to me, that's just way too much money to commit against the cap when you're thinking about, hey, can we afford to keep Josh Norman? What is Kawan Short's next contract going to look like if he continues to blow up the interior of offensive lines like he did? And so that is just, like I said, that is an intoxicating idea and possibility. But I just don't see Dave Gettleman, who believes in finding a franchise quarterback and building inside out from the lines. I just can't see him committing that much money to a veteran wide receiver that's having some injury issues right now. But Bart Scott, and he's talking about destinations for Calvin Johnson, he does continue to push the Panthers idea.
I think it's time for the Lions to part ways with him. You're not going to win a championship with him, so he's just going to get older and retire, and you're not going to get anything with him, and he's eating up a huge chunk of the salary cap. It's time to blow this thing up. You know, you see Sue left first. I think you have to, you know, really consider trading Calvin Johnson, somebody to take on that salary, and then you can free yourself up and start off young with a young nucleus again, maybe get rid of Stafford. You know, right now you can trade Megatron and get a first-round draft pick for next year, and you get cap space. I think that's the smart move right there. Boy, could you imagine Megatron and then next year coming back with Kelvin Benjamin?
Why you gotta tell me to imagine? Why you gotta be mean to me like that, Bart?
See, it's like just right on the cusp of like you shouldn't like if he was 2 years younger, I'd say you got to do that.
And the Lions are in such an interesting position to potentially give up on the Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson era, which has been great for fantasy owners, but not necessarily great for playoff wins. They have zero. But they're just at that age where it might make sense to try and move on from them. But at the end of the day, with Matt Stafford at 27 and Calvin Johnson at 30, you have to look at the head coaches that they've had shaping teams around them. I mean, those Lions teams from the past 4 or 5 years have been really talented. But they were coached by Jim Schwartz and Jim Caldwell. I mean, those are bottom five in the NFL head coaches at any point in time. I mean, you got to see the true value of Jim Caldwell as a head coach when Peyton Manning went down and the Colts won 2 games and got canned. I mean, when the Lions hired him, I was like, really? Seriously? He seems like a nice guy, maybe a good offensive coordinator. That's why Baltimore picked him up and they win the Super Bowl. But head coach again? Seriously? That guy?
I don't know. I understand what he's saying, especially being a fan of a team in the NFC North. I think the Vikings and the Packers signs are obviously pointing up, and the Bears and the Lions are kind of going down. So I don't think
that's
it would be too
shocking.
That's
the hardest position, though, when you've got – and you saw Jay Cutler paralyze the Bears for like 5 or 6 years in that quarterback purgatory. Just good enough that you're terrified about the possibility of not having him, but at the same time probably not worth that franchise quarterback money. Right, and I think they're kind of at that point with Stafford. And don't get me wrong, someone would snap him up immediately.
Yeah.
Like, you think the Redskins would love to have Matthew Stafford?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, I don't know, maybe Kirk Cousins wouldn't like that.
But no, I think you made a good point. If they sign the Megatron, it's pretty much saying bye-bye Josh Norman. And that might be a scenario regardless of Megatron's coming back, so.
The guy, Josh Norman, he just seems like he fits with the attitude of that defense. And we talked about this with the Panthers on Monday. They understand more than most teams in the NFL, maybe more than any, what their identity is. And I think that if they were to sign somebody that blatantly precluded them from keeping Josh Norman, I think that would be a mess. And granted, you and I aren't Dave Gettleman. We don't understand the intricacies of the salary cap to the point where we could figure out how to make both of them work. But it just seems like it wouldn't work. And 843-652-3776, what I'm interested in hearing from you guys, and just conceptually, how much would you give up for a championship? Because I think championships are kind of overrated as a sports fan because you can't have everything, right? Like, would you rather have the Florida Marlins and have two World Series and then just be an absolutely pedestrian franchise in almost all of those other years? Or would you rather be the, like, Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts? Let's say that they didn't win a championship, but you were going 12-4 every year and not making it, right? It's almost what Georgia has with Mark Richt, and people are just at their wits' end because they can't win a national championship, but it's like, really, the guy gives you 10 wins every season. You're relevant every season. Would you rather be Auburn and go to the BCS game twice and have 3-9 seasons? You know, it just, to me, saying that you are one player away and making such a big move for a guy that's overpriced and aging to potentially win this one Super Bowl, I think would just be hurt. I'm not down with that as a fan. I'm really looking forward to seeing how many young players this Panthers team has invested in Cam, invested in Luke Kuechly. I think that Ron Rivera has proven that he can coach. I would love to see Josh Norman long-term in Carolina as well. I mean, that was the discussion a couple of years ago. Can they afford to keep Greg Hardy? Well, the answer is no, and it wasn't for financial reasons. But I want to see what the nucleus of this team can do over a long run, because they've made two division championships in a row, but I think this is a team that could go on a playoff run for maybe the entirety of Cam's career. And I think as a fan, that's really awesome to be relevant over that one stretch. I don't want to see them mortgage it all just to try to win the Super Bowl this one year, when particularly in the playoffs, it can just be one bounce of the ball and you can have the best team and not win.
Yeah, I think if Cam was 3 or 4 years older and you knew he only had a few more good years left in the tank, I mean, obviously he's going to go for a while, but...
Well, he's taking a lot of hits. I mean, the quarterback productivity over the course of their career is, like, impossible to measure, because you've got Brady, who looks like he's better than ever, and then you've got Peyton, who looks like he needs to be put in the nursing home tomorrow, right? And they're not that far off in age. No, they're like 2 years apart, aren't they?
Yeah, but look how good Peyton played the last 2 years.
The neck surgeries factor in, so let's ignore Peyton. But I think that how good a quarterback is later in their career probably has a lot to do with how many hits they've taken and whether they run or not. And we don't know how well Cam's going to age because he's been sacked a lot and he's run the football a lot. 843-652-3776. And it doesn't even necessarily mean this year's Carolina Panthers team. That's the prompt for starting this conversation. I mean, are you a fan of the general manager ballsy chips to the center of the table all-in move? Like, I admire it when I see another general manager do it, like what the Toronto Blue Jays did this year, going out and getting Tulowitzki. But at the same time, it comes at a future cost, and only one team can win a championship. And think about how many times luck changes that. And I would just, you know, I'd kind of want to be relevant each and every year rather than selling out for a title. We've got Big Paulie on the line. What's up, Big Paulie?
Hey, how's it going today, Lewis?
Doing well, man. What's up?
You know, I don't think they should go after someone like a Calvin Johnson. Like you said, we don't want to mortgage the future. But one thing I think they should look into, and it's going to take the GM, Gettleman, to swallow his pride and say, hey, I'm sorry. But look at Steve Smith in Baltimore. I mean, not for nothing, but I mean, this guy, not only his locker room presence, okay, but I mean, his productivity on the field is still good, but I think he would be able to teach the younger players, because there are a lot of young players, this is how you play football. This is how you act as a professional. This is how you train and prepare for a game. I mean, I know Kelvin Benjamin's hurt, but, I mean, he can impart that type of knowledge. It's not going to cost him a lot. He's not going to mortgage the future for it. And I think he would give them a very, a much more potent offense in terms of the aerial attack than what they have now. What do you think about that?
You know, Big Paulie, you bring up a very interesting proposition there. Steve Smith is my all-time favorite Panther with Thomas Davis. They're 1A and 1B. I can't figure out which, you know, trying to, it's like I don't have kids, so I can't say it's picking your favorite kid. But I love both of those guys. And the idea of Steve Smith finishing out his career in Carolina would be excellent. And I am going to explain probably why the Panthers won't do that, but I'm going to do that after this commercial break. Appreciate the call, Big Pauly. We'll weigh in on that next. This is Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
A lot of media outlets reporting on hypothetical NFL trades as we approach the trade deadline. Teams that are considered to be a player away or teams who are out of it already. And one idea is that the Panthers are one player away. If they just got that big-time wide receiving threat to pair with Greg Olsen in the passing game, they would be complete. That's an idea that's floating around out there. And my main question, hypothetically, is what is the price for going all in? Like, if you're a sports fan, isn't the best thing you can hope for is relevance every year? Because championships involve a certain kind of luck. And if you are trying to put all your chips in the middle of the table and say, okay, we're the Panthers, we're going out to get Calvin Johnson because this is our year to win the Super Bowl. What happens if you still lose at Lambeau Field in the NFC Championship game, and then suddenly you've got a 30-year-old wide receiver who's due $16.2 million a year through 2020, and then you can't re-sign Josh Norman? It just, to me, that one instance with Calvin Johnson, it just doesn't seem like it'll work to me. It doesn't seem like it's worth it, because how much luck is involved, even when you have a good team. Remember the 18-0 Patriots lose the Super Bowl because a guy named David Tyree catches a football off his helmet and then does not play in the NFL after that. He was on a roster, but he did not make an NFL catch after he caught that ball from Eli Manning and won and kept them alive in a game in which they ended up winning. The Patriots were perfectly organized for a championship that one year. So that just goes to show you, in my opinion, why if I'm a general manager and if I'm a fan, long-term relevance is what I want. And Big Pauly called in last segment, introduced the idea along that same vein, of getting someone who would be cheaper than Calvin Johnson. And that is Steve Smith, someone who, as I mentioned to end the segment, is one of my all-time favorite Panthers. I also know Steve because when I was working in radio in Charlotte, he would, on the afternoon show, which was called The Drive at that time, he was a regular guest every Wednesday. And so being one of the producers of that show, I would interact with Steve in pre-show meetings. And he was every bit as you would expect him to act. Very intense guy, very amusing, although he did look like he was going to hit you if you ever pulled a joke on him. He was fine making fun of you. He just didn't like to be made fun of back. But that's Steve Smith. I mean, he's as you would expect. And what is hinted at, but what we don't know for a fact, is what his value was in the locker room. We do know that since he is such a great receiver into his late 30s that he is a professional in terms of the way he approaches the game, in terms of how he keeps his body in shape in the offseason, and his intensity not only in games but in practice. But there is this idea out there that his persona is too big for that Panthers locker room and that it might have been holding them back. And I don't think that Dave Gettleman cut Steve Smith if he thinks that he works well with Cam Newton, because I don't think the answer was that Steve Smith wasn't productive anymore, because I think he caught 970 yards the year that they cut him. So he was still a better receiver than they had waiting in the wings to replace him with. I think it was all about his personality and how he worked in that locker room. And I'm going to read you an excerpt from the Wall Street Journal. This was the piece I talked about last week with Ron Rivera. He talked about his atypical approach to coaching and how close he is with his players. And part of that is Ron Rivera has a locker in the Panthers locker room and just hangs out and talks to those guys about life. It's not like, uh-oh, the teacher's walked in the room, let's crumple up the note and throw it in the trash can. Ron Rivera is considered to be like one of the guys that you can say, hey, Coach Rivera, I'm thinking about getting a dog. Should I get a dog? Like, that was an example that they used. And the Wall Street Journal, this is a direct quote, Rivera was so taken with this idea that he took a bunch of players to dinner at Del Frisco's in 2013 and asked them to open up about what they thought about the team. The players didn't hold back. This guy was a bleep. This guy was a jerk, Rivera remembers the player saying. The coach shot back, I'm blown away. All of this happened? You guys should have told me. Now, that happened in 2013 in the spring, and Steve Smith was cut in 2013 in the spring. So I don't know for a fact that that piece refers to Steve Smith, but all of the hinting and innuendo moves to Steve Smith. And that doesn't make me love him as a Panther any less, because 89's intensity out on the field sure made a lot of those mediocre John Fox 7-9 teams a lot more exciting to watch on TV, when you could at least guarantee that Steve Smith was going to stiff-arm the crap out of a defensive back and score a touchdown that he shouldn't and get in somebody's face. It made you a lot more proud of a mediocre team, having him wear your jersey. But at some point in time, your production can get outweighed by your baggage. And I think that's where the Panthers were with Steve Smith. And as still a productive player as he is, I don't know that I would mess with the locker room when it seems to be perfect right now. 843-652-3776. But a great question by Big Pauly, and that's something that people in Charlotte are talking about right now. Calvin Johnson, Steve Smith, Anquan Boldin, what is available out there? And the other component of it is the Ravens are trying to ask him to play another season. They don't want him to retire this year because their offense is miserable without him. They've got Forsett. He's consistent on the ground, but Joe Flacco has nobody else to throw it to. I mean, they have Brashad Perryman, but he's out for the year. Their rookie wide receiver they got in the first round, they expected him to be what Kelvin Benjamin was for the Panthers last year, and he's unavailable. So their offense is anemic. And the Ravens are a proud franchise. I don't see them and Ozzie Newsome just saying, okay, let's go 1-15 this year. Let's get rid of Steve Smith and just hit the floor. Like, I don't see the Ravens as an organization being party to that move either.
And you got to take into consideration they've only lost their games by one score every single time.
Yeah, their worst defeat was the 8-point loss to the Cardinals on Monday night. That was their biggest loss this year. They're 1-6. Their biggest loss is 8 points.
So, I mean, like you say, a few bounces of the balls the other way, they could be, I wouldn't say undefeated, but
that's a tough division they're in, man.
Yeah.
Because the Steelers, Big Ben has more left in the tank. I don't know that he'll ever play a 16-game season again. But with Mike Tomlin and Big Ben, they're set up for the future. Cincinnati, I think Marvin Lewis is one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL. And who knows? Maybe Cleveland will screw up and hire a good coach or a good general manager.
He defies, like, the culture in coaching now, like with teams firing coaches willy-nilly and getting rid of them in the second of any trouble. Like, they were talking about him going back when Chad Johnson and Hushman Zada and Chris Henry were all on the team, and that was like 10 years ago at this point. So
yeah, no, I think he's done a terrific job, and he's a victim to, I mean, aren't the Cincinnati Bengals kind of what we're talking about in this conversation relevant every year? That's kind of what you can hope for. And then at some point in time, it's like, okay, Dalton has to have an okay game in the playoffs and they make a run, right? If you're in the playoffs every year, at some point you're going to make a run. And that's kind of been my position on Romo and Matt Ryan and some of the other quarterbacks that people bang on for not having rings. It's like, well, if you're in the playoffs every year, at some point you're going to be the beneficiary of the lucky throw and not, you know, not having that go against you. And I mean, I guess that defeats the clutch narrative, and I'm sure that there is, on some level, people that thrive better under pressure than others, but
it's real tough. I mean, the Packers sustain a high level of success for at least the majority of my lifetime. They've had a few bad droughts, but they're normally 10-plus wins.
They've
season,
had bad luck in the playoffs.
But they only have
for as
two
many
Super
times
Bowls
as they've been in the playoffs, to have one with Favre and one with Rodgers, they've underachieved with all of those playoff teams they've had. But yeah, they had the best of both worlds, right? I mean, they had the superstar quarterback and they had relevance for all that time.
Yeah.
But I don't think, well, I don't know if we can construct that hypothetical. But, you know, just starting that conversation, I mean, I don't want to see the Panthers give up too much in the future for this 1 year. Because with what they have, an outstanding defense, a young quarterback, a good culture, a good head coach, I think that they're going to be in the mix a lot. And when you bring Kelvin Benjamin back next year, that can fix a lot of problems. And while I want them to win the Super Bowl this year, I don't think that Calvin Johnson is necessarily a lock for that to happen. And I think that the downside of what you can afford in the future is significant when you have that much money committed to a player that you don't know what he's going to look like in 2 or 3 years when he's a step slower, how many games he can play for. I mean,
I always think he's going to be productive. I just think the $16 million and a first-round draft pick. I mean, even if it's going to be at the end of the first round, that makes it a little easier to swallow with the way the Panthers are playing. But $16 million, that's a lot to pay a guy in his 30s. I mean, I don't know, obviously, all the different scenarios where they could adjust his contract and things like that. That's way out of my knowledge.
Yeah,
but
NFL salaries, I mean, but the player has to agree to the restructure or he's cut. And Calvin Johnson could just say, hey, you guys want me to play for how little? Why don't you just cut me and see how someone else pays me?
Well, I'm sure he wants to win at some point, too. It's got to get being annoying for him to be in Detroit all these years and get so close and not really get the taste of success.
Nick tweets out 1003 the team. Relevancy is always more important. It's just too damn frustrating to see your team give up the future. Hashtag O's gave up Arrieta. Hey, in all fairness to the Orioles, Arrieta was like 29 or was like 28 or 29 before he had his first decent season. I mean, sometimes a dude's a real late bloomer. Like if the Panthers had given up on Josh Norman, there would have been a lot of people that would have understood. Josh Norman's 27. So he was 26 before he finally had his first indication that he was going to be a good NFL corner. So I guess, you know, maybe when you see a guy every day and you're seeing his talent, his personality up close and personal, maybe you should have known that Jake Arrieta was going to be a Cy Young caliber player. But that one, I don't know. Susan tweets in at 1003 the team. I totally disagree with what Big Pauly just said. Just no. Well, Susan listens to a lot of Charlotte sports talk, too, so she's probably more plugged into the Steve Smith rumors than I am. But, yeah, it would be amazing to have Smitty come back and finish his career in Carolina on a playoff run. Would absolutely be amazing.
We were talking during the break about another potential trade towards the Panthers, the Duggernaut, a.k.a. the Muscle Hamster.
The Muscle Hamster? On one
Martin.
Level, I'm sitting there thinking, man, what if you just said screw convention? Everybody says we want a big play wide receiver. Let's just maul people in the running game. Let's have the lightning cutback threat to the Jonathan Stewart sledgehammer and just be the best running game in football and invite people to stop us in the cold. But
I think that would be more foolish than Megatron.
No, and Brian, you brought the point too. Jonathan Stewart has thrived this year being the every down back. And I think sometimes, while it's good to rotate running backs to keep tread off their tires, I think there is something to guys not being able to fully unleash their skill set if they're not in the game consistently.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Stewart seems to be one of those guys that does better with more touches than he does, you know, getting six to D'Angelo Williams 20.
I mean, they gave him times, too, while D'Angelo was there, but you always have in the back of the mind with how much carries they split that he's always, like, one mistake and he's back in. I mean, I know that's the same for many positions and many players, but for them, it was a real, for real split. Like, it was, you never knew who was going to be starting running back then.
It'd be fascinating to me to see if Cutler moves, too. That was another one you mentioned during the break, Brian.
To the Texans is what they
Bill O'Brien has to look at Cutler like he's Joe Montana, like, compared to what he's dealing with down there. With Hoyer, Mallett can't even show up on time.
Talk about ridiculous contracts, though. Gosh.
Yeah.
I just think that makes it impossible for the Bears, even if they wanted to. Like, I don't think anyone's that desperate.
Yeah. Kevin tweets at 1003 the team, I want to be relevant every year. That's why the Jags firing Tom Coughlin still bothers me. He got them to the playoffs each year. Well, and Del Rio, too, man. Not every year, but compared to what's happened recently. Jacksonville's first two head coaches they hired were good hires, and since then it's been a bit of a mess. But yeah, and I think that's why it's dangerous. Anybody, Giants fans, talk about firing Tom Coughlin. And I get it. I mean, he ties into the age discussion earlier. I mean, at what time do you know a guy's finished? But every time, man, Tom Coughlin seems to be able to pull out that playoff magic every time he's on that hot seat. Granted, the people who are saying he's on the hot seat are in the media. That's not the Mara family.
They're
kind of
like
might
the opposite
be perfectly
of the Packers
him.
To me. Like, they're more mediocre to low end and have.
Is that what this conversation is turning into? Would you rather be the Giants or the Packers? The Giants have two rings.
Yeah, recently.
Since 2000, they've got two rings. They've got two championships. But there have been consistent stretches where they haven't made the playoffs. Or would you rather be the Packers and make it every year? I think they might have had one 5-11 year with Favre. Yet have one championship out of that mix. Because Favre's was in 96. So there's been a long run here where the Packers have been each year, like, who's your Super Bowl prediction? Well, we've got the Packers coming out of the NFC, and they've got one to show for it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean,
I don't know. Because on one level, you're in the playoffs. You're at the top of the power rankings. The people nationally are talking about your team every week, and that's cool. Like, being a Panthers fan and sitting through 7-9s all the time and just being one of those afterthought franchises for a long part of my childhood, the fact that people have to talk about your team every week is kind of cool. It is. But at the same time, when you become accustomed to success and don't win that championship, that's got to be rough too. Like, I know the Packers did get one with Rodgers and they got one with Favre before that, and I don't really want to talk about the 50s and 60s, but I don't know, because when you're a Giants fan, maybe you're not maybe you're not expecting that excellence, and then it comes out of nowhere, and it's awesome. I don't know. Anyways, 843-652-3776. Started this conversation, basically the Panthers, this idea that they're one player away. How much would you trade for this year versus being relevant in the future? Specific examples were perhaps trying to trade for Steve Smith, perhaps trying to trade for Megatron, Anquan Boldin, maybe. So if you want to weigh in on that, we've got room for you on the phone lines. And this idea that's struck the NBA, that somebody can go directly from playing professional basketball to being a good professional basketball coach. We've seen it with Jason Kidd. We've seen it with Derek Fisher, although not to the same success. We've seen Steve Kerr have no coaching experience. There are a lot of guys that just get to become a head coach without experience. We haven't seen that happen at all in the NFL or college football. There is a former Pro Bowl player that wants to coach in college next year. He has no coaching experience. We'll cover that next. Back on Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard. Brian Nelson is my producer. Love to hang out and talk local regional sports with you guys as we do every Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. 843-652-3776. The Panthers are in this position where they're set up to be relevant for a long time, but maybe they could sell out and get over the hump and get that first Super Bowl for the franchise this year. And all things considered, yeah, I would love to have another big play wide receiver, but what you have to give up, and when I said another, I should say one big play wide receiver. What you have to give up to get a player like that, I think, you know, makes your future a little more dicey. And maybe I'm just too conservative. Like, maybe it's, Lou, you need to live a little. Maybe you need to make some risky decisions. Roll the dice a little bit. I see their young players. Kawan Short's on a rookie deal. Kelvin Benjamin's on a rookie deal. Josh Norman is on a rookie deal. Like, I see all of these players that I really like their future, and I like their nucleus. I don't want to affect their ability to re-sign some of these homegrown kids because the locker room is so good. Chad Sullivan tweets at 1003 the team, I'd rather just be a Pats fan, hashtag best of both worlds. You know what, Chad? That's just not fair, what you just did there.
Yeah, I think the best way we could equate it to something that we would understand is, like, if you were doing really hot on your picks each week for the game of the week. Like,
I need to apologize to the audience. I started off really strong this year. At one point, I was 23-7 against the spread, I think. I was 1-5.
Well, let's say you just hit all of them right the first 6 weeks.
I failed all of you last week.
And then you're like, well, I'm hot. I'm going to get them all right. I'm going to sell my car, put the money on one of these teams this weekend in Vegas, and I'll have tons of money for the future, and I can retire or whatever. That is kind of what I would equate
Calvin Johnson
with Calvin Johnson with.
It would be ballsy, though.
It would be
exciting.
And it'd be entertaining.
And it would be like 24 hours nonstop of everybody talking about the Panthers, which, if you're a Panthers fan, is either cool or annoying. Because I was talking to a buddy about this earlier today, and we were talking about this show and just conceptually things that I do with it. And I try to not talk about sports that I don't watch or teams that I don't watch all that much, because I never want to speak ignorantly about somebody's favorite team. Because,
yeah,
like, when I hear someone talking about Cam Newton or UNC basketball or something like that, and I can tell that they don't watch and they're just saying negative things, it really pisses me off. So I try to not be that guy, but it is cool when your team is relevant and it has to be talked about.
Definitely.
843-652-3776. Now, Ed Reed is the NFL player who would consider, this is on the Rich Eisen show earlier in the week. Rich Eisen asks the very smart question, why guys aren't given the shot to coach football immediately, and would Ed Reed?
Yeah, I don't know what that is, Rich. You know, I guess it's something about experience, going through things, you know, experience things. But, I mean, you see things year in, year out. You go through things as a player. You know, the NBA did it with Jason Kidd. I even thought about it. You know, I was like, man, maybe put my name in the mix for a coaching job or something like that, because it seems like, you know, I mean, the partnership between players, coaches and coaches, you know, the head coach job, it seems to just, you know, kind of just make sure you manage everybody, manage the game, you know, and try to help the offense and defensive coordinator make the best decisions, you know, and them help him do the same thing. You know, so I haven't received a call from a 305 number, just so you know.
Would you want a call from a 305 number?
I would definitely listen. Definitely would go and talk and want to know, you know, where they're trying to go, what they want to do, you know, what they're looking to do, you know, and I would entertain it. You know, I'm in a different place in my life right now, you know, working out, training, you know, coaching from afar, helping guys out, you know, high school, college, pros alike, you know, so definitely would entertain it.
Miami has botched three successive head coaching hires with Larry Coker into Randy Shannon and Al Golden. That's the number one reason they're irrelevant right now. They can't give a head coaching job to someone with zero experience and roll the dice like that. They're just not in that position. But can you imagine Miami's first recruiting class with Ed Reed as the coach? I mean, my goodness. I mean, all of those kids that are 16, 17, I mean, they grew up idolizing Ed Reed on TV, making huge plays, and playing with him in Madden. Like, can you imagine that recruiting impact? I mean, it might go away if they went five wins, two back-to-back seasons, but that would be a recruiting just absolute monster, having Ed Reed down in Miami. But it does bring up that interesting point that basketball, I don't know what it says about the sport, is more willing to trust former players immediately because is it the staffs are smaller? Is it less managerial? Are the X's and O's less complicated, and that's why it's not seen like you need coaching experience? It's hard to tell that whether it's just the NFL culturally in terms of how teams are owned and managed versus the NBA culturally, but it is kind of crazy to think that guys can just, with zero coaching experience, become head coaches in the NBA, and it's not happening at all in football.
I just think it's easier, especially for a point guard, because you really know the role and intricacies of pretty much all the other positions on the floor. In football, if you just took like a safety or tight end, they might know the offensive line very well. I mean, I know you have coordinators and stuff, but you still got to have an idea of what is happening.
Well, the ultimate test, you know what the ultimate test here is going to be? The ultimate test is Peyton Manning. Does Peyton Manning, I hope he retires at the end of the year. I don't want to see Peyton Manning with less gas in his tank. That's just not... I hate seeing that. Somebody that's that classy, that competitive, be a shell of his former self. I hope we don't have to go through this another season. But, and it's crazy to think I'm talking about an undefeated quarterback right now, but if you watch him throw, it's not fun. He could be a head coach, right? I mean, he comes off as the highest football IQ of the past 10, 15 years. He basically calls his own offense at the line of scrimmage. I don't know why he has an offensive coordinator. And people always say that about an offensive coordinator. Well, that guy shouldn't be deemed a head coaching candidate because Peyton Manning runs that offense. Like, I could see a college team 100% would hire Peyton Manning. Like, are you kidding me? Like, South Carolina fans would be beyond jacked if Peyton Manning was their head coach. I mean, I think they would be, even without his having coaching experience. That would be interesting to me to see if Peyton Manning can get a head coaching job right off the bat without having to be quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, you know, then head coach. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little more about that Miami job. I didn't really have enough time here to get into my thoughts. I disagree with everybody that says it's a terrible job. I'll elaborate on that next and call the day. It's coming up next in Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Another tweet. Chad tweets out 1003 The Team. Ed Reed coaching to you. Problem solved. I don't think so. I mean, can you imagine the halftime speeches, though? I mean, there would be some pretty compelling material coming out of Ed Reed.
I'm hurt, dog. Don't ask me if I'm all right. Hell no. Joaquin said dominate, and we not doing it. I'm putting my heart in this, dog. Let's go, man.
You couple that with the talent that's in the 305? I don't know.
I feel like I could run through a wall right now.
I'm hurt, dog. They came back and beat Florida State 2001. Don't ask him if he's okay. I just, man, it's just crazy. The NBA, it flies. In the NFL, it doesn't. And I still think, though, that Peyton Manning defies the norm, that he could be that guy that comes on out and gets a job. I really do. But for me, Miami, this came up in conversation with a buddy earlier today as well. I think this is a terrific job. I get the problems with it. One, their finances. They're going to pay a coach less than just about every job that's open right now. Like, I think they're probably going to spend about $2 million a year on their head coach, and it takes 4 to 6 these days to get a top coaching candidate. Like, South Carolina is going to be able to double the money that they're offering a head coach than Miami. But with Miami, you have access to the 305 talent, which is enormous.
No state income tax.
You don't have to. Interesting point, Brian. Didn't even think about that. Way to add value today, producer. Way to get in there and tear it up. No state income tax. The $2 million goes a little bit more, right? You know, you got $2 million, and a lot of that's not, you know, I don't even know what normal state income tax is. I just know it takes a little bit out of my paycheck, whatever. Perhaps this guy should know more about his own finances. Anyways, they have all that access to talent. You don't even have to get all of it. They are competing against Florida and Florida State for Miami talent. They are competing against Clemson and Georgia and all of these other people. But you just get a small percentage of it, and you've got a top 20 class. That's what Al Golden was able to do. And if you've got a gifted recruiter in Miami, then you've got a top 5 class. And your title path is easier than just about anybody in sports. The ACC Coastal Division is garbage. And this is North Carolina fan who's saying it right now, and whose North Carolina Tar Heels are playing against Pitt tonight at 7 o'clock for a chance to maintain the ACC Coastal lead. But the ACC Coastal is absolutely bereft of a powerhouse school. So if Miami gets rolling with big-time talent and a nice coach, they're looking at one game against Florida State or Clemson in the ACC Championship game coming out of the Atlantic Division, and then boom, you're in the playoffs. It's not like being in the SEC West where you got to win 3 or 4 rugged games to get to the championship game of your conference to then get to the playoffs. Miami would have it set up, man. They got a good coach.
Maybe they get a gruesome twosome with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis.
Yeah. who knows? Yeah, I think that would just be a recruiting windfall, but too risky to bring in a guy after you've had 3 consecutive terrible coaching hires. But access to talent and championship path. That's why I think Miami's actually a great gig. Now, we'll see if they'll be able to land anybody this offseason. I get that they have no fans showing up to their games. I understand that. Don't tweet me pictures. All right, Sports Talk's coming up next. Stay right here.